Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, February 5th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So me, I'm not doing too bad. I've been riding my bike mostly indoors. I chose not to go to spin class this weekend because I just wasn't feeling it. But I rode 28 miles on my trainer. I know some people think that's crazy to ride 28 miles indoors, but I did. And it took me, an hour and 45 minutes, something like that, or a little less than an hour and 45. And rode on group rides on Zwift, so that was fun. And my knees seem to be getting better and better, and I really think it's because of the new supplement I'm taking that's helping, and that's green-lipped mussel. Green-lipped mussel is interesting because it has omega-3 fatty acids in it, and it has glycosaminoglycans, which are, those are support structure for your joints and cartilage. So I hadn't been taking anything with glycosaminoglycans, like I hadn't been taking glucosamine or anything like that, but only been taking collagen. And I think this has kicked it up a notch. And so I'm very pleased with it. And I have minimal pain in my knees. I still wear a sleeve on my right knee when I work out. But I'm not taping and I'm not putting a sleeve on other times, just when I work out. And that was recommended to me by Dr. Scott, my chiropractor, who said, if you support your knee all the time, then it won't get stronger. You want it to be able to, you want to be able to strengthen the muscles without any support. So it's not good to wear a sleeve all the time. So if I were in a lot of pain, then I would, but I'm not, which is so great. It's nice to not be in pain. The only spot I have in pain is I have some left flank pain because I have some ribs that want to go out of alignment. Dr. Scott fixes it, and then it kind of comes back. And then I have to do, if I stretch and move around during the day, it goes away. But it's when I've been still for a long time that it comes up. So that's going on. And in terms of Lyme symptoms, really the only symptom I have left is extreme fatigue if I overdo it. And the only thing that seems to be really overdoing it is work. At the end of a work day, I feel absolutely exhausted. And some days worse than others. But then I have, depending on the day, I may have to recover a lot on the following day. So figuring out a way to make my work days less exhausting is the struggle that I have. The everything that goes into patient care, it's not just seeing the patients, it's doing charts and having extra work at the end of the day, so I'm not getting out of the office until 7-8 o'clock at night, and I'm just blitzed by then. So if I can figure that out, life will be really, really good. I mean, it's pretty good as it is now, but that would be a wonderful thing if I could get rid of that excessive fatigue. That would be terrific. Also, dairy. So I had a talk with a patient who wanted to lose weight but also wanted to eat dairy. And I give out this great fat loss handout that has a whole bunch of things on it that mostly don't have to do with fat loss, but they have to do with lifestyle. Because my feeling about fat loss is healthy at any size. And That means you should be as healthy as you can be at any size. Now, if somebody is 400 pounds and they're really, really struggling and, you know, they've tried everything and they can't lose weight, then, you know, you look at other alternatives. You have to weigh the risks and benefits of GLP-1 enhancers like your semaglutides and your tirzepatides and stuff like that. And you also have to weigh the risks and benefits of bariatric surgery. So some people choose to go in that direction. And by the way, if you have had bariatric surgery, meaning any kind of surgery to help with fat loss, that you've had a gastric sleeve where they make a tiny little stomach for you, or a Roux-en-Y, or a gastric bypass, whatever surgery you have done, there are post-bariatric surgery cookbooks that you can get. So you just look online and you can find them. And because I have patients who absolutely struggle with their digestive health after they have bariatric surgery, they have dumping syndrome, which is they're running for the bathroom right after they eat, or they have, you know, gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea after bariatric surgery. And there are ways of eating so you can mitigate that. So, and there's whole cookbooks based on, you know, for people who have had bariatric surgery. So I recommend going and finding one of those books and getting some recipes from that. You have to modify amounts of fiber. You have to modify your diet based on what your current symptoms are. And of course, you know, even if you've had the bariatric surgery, you still have to eat in a way that promotes a healthy weight for you. So you have to work on that. So in terms of fat loss, I don't recommend people focus on the numbers on the scale, because it just makes you nuts. And there are feelings in the medical community that, you know, don't even bother to weigh people. It's good to have kind of an idea of what's going on, because then you have an idea of how to dose people with medications or with supplements. But also, it can be a measure of health, not so much whether a person is obese, but if somebody rapidly loses a whole bunch of weight, you want to know if there's a health condition that caused that. So I do monitor people's weight. I don't necessarily take their weight every single time, but I kind of monitor it and try to not make it a big deal. If a patient says to me, please don't weigh me this time, I don't. I give them that option. If somebody makes a noise before I'm about to weigh them, they're like, oh, I say, okay, I'll give you some options. I can not weigh you today, or I can weigh you and not tell you what it is. I'll make you turn around and I won't tell you the number. Or I can not weigh you. You tell me what you would like to do. Because doctors can't do anything to you that you don't want them to do. If you say, I decline this procedure, this medicine, this whatever, you can't do anything about that unless they are unconscious. Once they're unconscious, then you can do things to help to revive them. And you can make those decisions unless you have a DNR order in front of you. So if a patient says to me, don't weigh me today, you don't weigh them and you don't push it. You be kind to them and meet them where they're at. Meeting a patient where they're at is really a good thing. It's always a good thing. And talking to your patients is a good thing. You should know this. Anyway, so just thought I'd point that out. Meanwhile, in terms of fat loss, really, the most important thing is that the number one thing is that you reduce stress, and all the things on my handout are about lifestyle, and the top two things are stress reduction. What is stress reduction good for? Anybody? Bueller? What's stress reduction good for?
Reducing stress?
Yeah. What condition is it good for? It's a trick question.
The condition
that stress reduction is good for is all of them.
Oh, okay. That's the trick.
Yeah. Right. It also helps you to lose fat, because when you do stress reduction, you reduce your cortisol, and cortisol causes you to gain fat in your tummy, in your central area. So stress reduction is important. Drinking water is important. Eating fiber is important. Eating a diet that works for you, staying away from food intolerances. So I was talking to this patient about dairy, and she said, can I eat dairy and on a weight loss diet? And the answer is, I don't know. Can you? I don't recommend a lot of dairy, especially for women trying to lose weight, especially for postmenopausal women trying to lose weight, because dairy is, no matter how you look at it, it's filtered cow's blood. Even if it's from a grass-fed cow that never saw an artificial hormone in its life, It still filters cow's blood, and because it's filtered cow's blood, there's always going to be some hormones in it. That's number one. So those hormones can be proliferative, and they're proliferative to build a calf from 44 pounds to 1 to 2 tons. The other piece is that dairy protein, casein and whey, increase insulin, and insulin increases body fat and it increases growth. That's why it's in there, so you can grow a calf from 44 pounds to 1 to 2 tons. And so it's, if you're a postmenopausal woman trying to lose weight, dairy's not the best thing for you. Having said that, I'm never going to say never. Dairy is not toxic to you unless you're allergic to it or you get digestive upset. If you eat a food that gives you digestive upset, it's not good for you. And you want to have optimal digestion while you're trying to lose fat. So if you can, because I have women who come in and they love their Greek yogurt. Who doesn't love Greek yogurt? It's delicious. If I were to eat Greek yogurt every day, I would be in so much pain. It would be awful. And people are like, well, I'm lactose intolerant. Well, if you're reacting to Greek yogurt, it's probably not the lactose, because the deal with Greek yogurt is it's been strained, so there's an extremely high content of protein in it. What's the protein? Casein and whey. Casein and whey increase insulin, which increases, it helps blood sugar to get into your cells, but if you can't get all the blood sugar into your cells, it turns the sugar into fat and causes you to store it. So it's not the best thing. And it's a funny question. Is it okay to have XYZ? The answer is always, I don't know. Try it and see. What are your goals? If your goal is fat loss and you eat this food and your fat loss is not happening, then consider staying away from the food. If you're overdoing dairy, if you're having, dairy, when you have Greek yogurt as your meal, then you're having a whole bunch of dairy as a macronutrient. If you're having a few cubes of cheese on your great big fibrous salad, that's a different story, because you're having a lot less fat and protein from the dairy. So you might be able to get away with that. I can get away with that, but I don't think every day. I get really grass-fed raw milk cheese, and I have it every couple of days. And, if I start to feel a little weird, then I skip a couple of days. And it would probably be 100% better if I didn't have it at all. But I'm not telling you not to have it at all. I'm saying, if you're wondering if a food is helpful for you, eat it. See what happens. If you are not meeting your goals, then you may want to kick out that food. And there is a scientific problem with dairy protein when it comes to fat loss, and that is that casein and whey increase insulin and therefore increase fat storage, and there could be proliferative hormones in the dairy that also will increase fat storage. So that's the problem. That's the basic problem with dairy. So anyway, so we're talking about that. Meanwhile, like I said, my main thing is working on my energy, and I have to moderate caffeine, and I have to make sure I get rest, and I'm always seem to be chasing rest. On a day like today, where we're recording my show, I did some exercise this morning. I'm doing the show, then have to process the show, go to the office and do charts. And depending on how many charts I have, I'll be there a short time or a long time. Then I get to come home and relax before I go into my work day tomorrow, where I see lots of patients. So let's check in with Ron. Hey, Ron, how are you feeling?
Hey, I'm good.
Yes.
I'm good.
Describe your experience in the last couple of days.
I've had some hot and cold experiences in the last couple of days.
What does that mean?
Meaning that some days are good and some days are just like they were. So I'm still having severe fatigue issues in the legs, but I have occasional, I went to the cardiologist, and I had the test done on the bottom of my legs.
Yeah.
And he said, I can tell you whether you're having a sunny day or a cloudy day.
Yes.
I'm having some sunny days.
That's awesome.
But very occasional.
Yeah.
And no real rhyme or reason as to why, but...
Well, there is probably a rhyme or reason. There's always a reason why, because
right.
You weren't having those before.
Right, exactly.
What did you change?
What did I change?
Yeah.
Well, I've been staying on the Lyme protocol.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that. And I've been doing a little bit more work on my back and neck.
Yes.
As far as my stretching and yoga goes.
Good. And, I told you to work on your neck because you have a compromised neural foramen in your cervical spine.
Right. And last night, for the first time, I gave this a try. And I put one of those. You know when you fly on an airplane, you sometimes put those neck pillows on?
Yes, indeed.
So I slept with a neck pillow.
Oh, you did?
Night. Yes,
I missed that.
Yeah.
Where was I?
You were sleeping.
Oh, I never saw that.
Yeah, well, you sleep.
So that's good. I had a good night of sleep last. Some nights I don't sleep well, and some nights I sleep like the pure of heart.
Yeah, you were out cold last night.
That's good.
So I gave that a try, and I'm going to continue to give that a try.
Yeah.
Been kind of exploring different things.
You're sleeping with a necklace. Because the other night, like when I went to change the sheets, I pulled your pillow out of the pillowcase, and there was my favorite towel that I used in the bathroom.
Rolled up
after.
In the inside.
Yes.
Right, right.
Yes.
That was to try to create some sort of a neck.
A cervical lordosis support.
Okay, that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would never have pulled that out. But anyway. Yeah.
It's my job.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, I'm trying to support my neck in different ways, and I'm trying to do some more exercises or stretches that are oriented in that direction.
Yeah.
And I've got to make an appointment with a chiropractor this week.
So when are you going to do that?
Well, you know, if you want to help, I'll let you help. But
okay.
I'll do it.
Do you... So do you think you'll see Dr. Scott or do you see Dr. Brian?
Well, you have someone you like to see.
I do.
So I may consider going there.
Oh, I would love to go to your first visit.
Maybe. I guess you're going to
I want to hear what he has to say.
Right. And you're going to my first naturopath visit.
Yes, that's right.
With the Lyme specialist.
Yes, and you wanted me to do that.
Yeah.
No, but Dr. Scott, I want to see what his take on your stuff is.
Right. So the other thing I haven't done yet, and I've got to call the hospital where I had my x-rays done, my back and neck, is I need to get the images so I can bring them to him because he might want to see them.
I really think all you need to do is show up at radiology and say, can I here's my report.
I'm not going to drive down to Bacchus.
Bacchus.
You know, remember I had done a ways
away. Oh, I understand. You probably can get them from Wyndham.
Yeah.
First you have to call radiology and find out, but
exactly.
I don't see why you couldn't get them from Wyndham because it's all Hartford Healthcare.
Yeah, it seems like they could transport them easily enough.
It's in the system.
It would be in the system.
Exactly.
In the file.
They could just pull it up and they'll give you CD right at Wyndham.
But it's not in my chart.
No, the x-rays, the actual x-rays, the reports are in my chart.
The reports are in my chart, but the x-rays themselves are not there.
That's usually how that goes.
But if I reach out to them and say my chiropractor would like to see them.
I went and had x-rays, and I got CDs the same day.
Yeah.
But I was also, I got them at Wyndham where I got the x-rays.
Right. Right.
But I don't see why they couldn't give him to you at Wyndham.
Right.
Because
I'm sure they probably
can. Yeah.
So that's the other thing I want to do is I want to have that looked at.
Yeah.
And, you know, see what we can do about bringing things back. Because yesterday, I was trying to pull it up on the computer to show you. But yesterday I had I taught an extreme spin class, which is an hour and a half long class.
Yeah.
And we did basically six blocks of 10-minute blocks, six 10-minute blocks during this class. And they were hard, but I got my heart rate up into zone 4 for the first time.
Wow.
I can't tell you how many months it's been. It's been a really, really long time.
I don't know if that is, spinal stenosis or if that is Lyme.
Well, the fact is, I was not restricted by the leg issues that I'm having.
Right.
So I could get up that high, whereas I have not been able to do that for 6 or 8 months now.
We are on to something.
Yeah,
I think
we're
on to
something.
Yeah.
So I'm getting closer.
Yeah.
So the short answer is I'm getting closer. The long answer you just heard.
I'm getting closer
to
my, what is it, love or world or?
Home.
Home. Yep. Okay. What song is that?
It's from Grand Funk Railroad.
It's the new generation.
No,
one?
No. It's not. No.
Okay.
But anyway.
No, that was what I just sang was the Guess Who.
Right.
Okay. All right. So there you go. Anyway. So that's what's going on with Ron. Awesome. Mm-hmm. So the theme today is mostly about osteoarthritis because that's what I'm dealing with in my knees. And I told you about the green lipped muscle, which I'm very happy about. So let's talk about magnesium. Magnesium is something that is helpful for osteoarthritis. So what are the best forms of magnesium? I've gone through this before, but I'm going to go back to it because it's always a good thing to go over. There are different forms of magnesium that you can take, and your body treats them and absorbs them differently. And a lot of magnesium can be found in a lot of foods. It's especially high in leafy green vegetables because anything with chlorophyll in it has a lot of magnesium in it. And it's because chlorophyll is basically the same compound as hemoglobin, which is the that's the red compound that's in your blood, and its job is to run around your body and pick up and drop off oxygen. And the reason it's able to do that is because there's iron at the center of it. And as you know, iron rusts easily. Rust is iron oxide. So in hemoglobin, hemoglobin will pick up oxygen when you breathe it, and oxygen, and it will drop off oxygen into your tissues. So it's very good at going back and forth. Well, magnesium does that in plants. It does the same thing because it picks up oxygen easily. You get magnesium oxide and then it drops it off in plants. And chlorophyll is basically the same compound, whereas in hemoglobin, the middle of the compound has an iron atom in it. And in chlorophyll, it's magnesium. So there's lots of magnesium in any leafy green plant. There's also magnesium in legumes, in beans, and also in nuts and seeds. And as much as 2/3 of people in Western diets don't meet their magnesium needs with diet alone. I wonder if we do. We tend to eat a lot of salad, and I like to eat a lot of nuts and seeds.
We do, but I also take supplements every day for magnesium.
So do I. I know. And I encourage a lot of my patients to take magnesium supplements. Mm. So magnesium citrate is the first form. It's bound with citric acid. That's what's in citrus fruits. It gives it their tart flavor, and citric acid is often added to stuff. It's particularly added to drinks. It'll be often added to your electrolyte drink. It's definitely added to mine to give it a little tartness. There's a study that suggests that it's pretty bioavailable. It's pretty easily absorbed in your digestive tract than other forms. And you take it orally to replenish low magnesium levels. It also has a natural laxative effect. And I think that's because it isn't necessarily the best absorbed one. It does tend to wind up in your colon if you take higher amounts of it. And then it'll draw water to it and help you go to the bathroom. Magnesium, I think for constipation, magnesium both gets into your colon and draws water to it. So it makes it easier to have a bowel movement. But it also replenishes your tight colon muscles, so they have more relaxed moderate peristalsis, so things move through more readily. So if you take that stuff called calm is magnesium citrate, that's what it is. Then there's magnesium oxide. Magnesium oxide is cheap. Some people take it and it works for them. A lot of people take it. It's not really well absorbed. It's a really good one to take if you are in fact constipated. It's really not well absorbed. So I tend not to recommend it. And if people come in and they've gotten an inexpensive magnesium supplement from the drugstore, I'm like, well, you're not really going to absorb that. And I tell them this magnesium is dirt. And I don't mean that in a mean way. It literally is the form of magnesium that is in soil. So please, if you want to take magnesium and you want it to work, that's not really a good one to take. Then there's magnesium chloride. Magnesium chloride is not, it can be well absorbed, and it's a good multi-purpose supplement. And it can be taken in capsules and tablet form. And it's also the one that's often used topically. So Epsom salts are magnesium sulfate, but magnesium, you can get magnesium chloride flakes that people put in their bathtubs. And it's also, when you get those magnesium quote unquote oils that you use topically to calm sore muscles or calm muscle cramping, that's usually magnesium chloride. And the funny thing is when you put magnesium chloride in water, it has an oily consistency. So people call it magnesium oil. It's not technically oil because it's just magnesium dissolved in water, but it does have an oily consistency. And, you know, I find that that topical magnesium, I put a little bit on every day just to help keep my muscles calm, but I have it next to me when I'm doing yoga in my bedroom because the place that tends to cramp during yoga, it doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes it does, are my feet. And if I'm doing a yoga class that's online, that's, you know, like a YouTube, I can stop the video and grab the magnesium and put it on my feet and then start it up again. And then no more cramps for the rest of the class. And if one foot is cramping, I put it on both feet just in case. So then there's magnesium lactate. Magnesium lactate is very absorbable. Your muscles really like magnesium lactate. And it's put into food to regulate acidity, and your digestive tract really absorbs it readily. It's a little harder to find in capsules. I have sources of it, but magnesium lactate is actually a very nice form of magnesium to absorb. And you can get it in slow release as well. And if you have digestive upset with magnesium, other forms of magnesium, you might do better with magnesium lactate, especially if it's slow release. It may help with stress and anxiety too. Then there's magnesium malate, which has malic acid, which is in foods like fruit and wine. It has a sour taste, and they add it to food to add flavor or acidity. And magnesium malate is also well absorbed by your digestive tract. I like magnesium malate if they're mostly using it for muscle cramps because malic acid it helps your muscles to function more regularly and calmly. It's regularly used to treat fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome. So that's a nice one. Then there's magnesium taurate, which is magnesium bound to the amino acid taurine. And both taurine and magnesium can help to regulate blood sugar, so it can help with healthy blood sugar levels. And magnesium and taurine also support healthy blood pressure. And there was a study that showed that magnesium taurate helped to reduce blood pressure in rats with high levels, so it can boost your heart health. Then there's magnesium L-threonate. I think of magnesium L-threonate as one of the best ones to get into the brain. So if you have somebody who really wants to support anxiety, or if you have kids in the spectrum, this is a good one to take. And you can get it in powder, and they'll flavor it with grape or something that's appealing to children. And it is easily absorbed. And there are some studies that it may be the most effective type for increasing magnesium in the brain cells. That's why we give it for anxiety and for spectrum disorders. It's used for its potential brain benefits. It can help manage certain brain disorders like depression, Alzheimer's, and memory loss. Then there's magnesium sulfate. That is what Epsom salts are. It's formed by combining magnesium, sulfur, and oxygen, and it has a texture similar to table salt, well, coarse table salt anyway. And if you consume it as a treatment for constipation, it doesn't taste good. And if you use too much of it, it can be dangerous. I don't recommend taking magnesium sulfate orally. Magnesium sulfate is something you want to take if you want to detox, but I don't recommend taking it orally. It's not something I ever suggest. Magnesium sulfate is something I recommend to take a bath in. So you put a couple of cups in your bathtub and you soak for at least 20 minutes. That's how I like to use magnesium sulfate, and it can be really nice in terms of relaxing muscles and reducing stress. The evidence isn't really good that you absorb it through your skin. As I've said before, I think the way that magnesium, that Epsom salts work to calm you down is that when the Epsom salts touch the nerve endings in your skin. It sends a signal through all of the nerves to tell them to calm down. But it's not that you're actually absorbing it. It's just that it's touching your skin. That's why you get into the tub and you feel better right away. You feel calmer all of a sudden. Because the magnesium, it's doing its thing on your nerve endings of the where it's touching. That makes the most sense to me. Then there's magnesium glycinate, one of my favorites. It tends to be less pricey than threonate, so I tend to give it out more. And I have a form at my office that's glycinate and malate together, which I think is very effective and useful and well tolerated as far as I can tell. It's the one that I tend to take. So glycine is helpful for making protein in your body, and it is part of collagen. So glycine is in meat and dairy and legumes and fish. And glycine on its own can help improve sleep. I will attest to that. I've taken plain glycine. It knocks me right out. It's too much for me. And it gives me very interesting dreams. So I don't take it anymore because it was too much for me. And glycine can help inflammatory conditions and it can help with pain. That's one of the reasons I like to give magnesium glycinate, because the glycine gets into your brain, it's calming, and it also gets into your muscles, and it helps with calming them too, and it can help with pain. There's been studies on it that show it can reduce pain. And it, again, it's shown to be helpful for anxiety, depression, stress, and insomnia. Then there's magnesium orotate. So orotic acid with an O, it's a substance that's involved in your body's construction of genetic material like DNA. Also easily absorbed, doesn't have strong laxative effects. It's not going to have strong laxative effects because it's easily absorbed. Not much of it makes it into your colon. So it's going to get in and do its thing in your body. There's research that suggests it may promote heart health. It helps in the energy production pathways in your heart and blood vessels. And it's popular among competitive athletes and fitness enthusiasts. I didn't realize that. So there was a study in 2009 of people with congestive heart failure. They found that magnesium orotate was more effective for symptom management and survival than a placebo. But it is a little pricier. So for some people, they might want to go with a cheaper form as long as it does what they want it to do. I mean, I think you can manage blood pressure. If you're looking at managing blood pressure, you can do that with magnesium glycinate. However, sometimes I'll switch around. I will get magnesium orotate, and sometimes I'll get magnesium taurate. I'm thinking about getting the taurate next time. So if you don't have low magnesium levels, there's no evidence that suggests a supplement will provide a beneficial benefit, although we have a feeling in natural medicine that there is the dose that you take to get you past a deficiency state, and then there's the dose that you take that's therapeutic. And if you take magnesium and you feel better when you take it, I think it's a good idea to take it. And most people don't eat enough produce and don't eat enough nuts and seeds. And then Ron and I were very physically active. So the more physically active you are, the higher your need for magnesium is. And the more stressed you are, the higher your need for magnesium. And also if you have blood sugar regulation issues, that's an issue as well. So I tend to offer magnesium to most of my patients, I admit. It's something that's easy and can make people feel better, somewhat better quickly. You can get your magnesium in black beans and edamame. I like to eat toasted edamame as a snack. I like to keep those around. I tend to do well with soy. I don't eat tons of soy, but I do. If I have the toasted edamame in hand, I eat that as a snack. It's in kale, avocado, spinach, and all leafy greens. It's in almonds, peanuts, and cashews, and pretty much all nuts and seeds. It's also high in oatmeal and whole wheat, and it's in dark chocolate. So if you can't get it enough from your diet, there's some populations that are greater risk of deficiency. That's older adults, people with type 2 diabetes, digestive disorders, and people who have alcohol dependence. So your need for magnesium goes up if you're trying to detox it out of your body. And of course, different supplements can vary in amounts. They're generally considered safe. Once you've reached adequate levels, your body's going to excrete extra in your urine and your stool. And certain forms or excessive can give you diarrhea or upset stomach. So, and then some people just, I give them every form of magnesium to try and they can't tolerate any of them. And if that's true, then I just talk to them about eating foods that are higher in magnesium. You can get magnesium toxicity if you really, really overdo it. And that's hard to do, but it's not impossible. And I always tell my patients, if you have loose stool, that you're taking too much because it's not benefiting you if it's coming out. If you don't have a problem with constipation, you don't want to have loose stool anyway. And if your stools are loose because you're taking a high dose of magnesium, it's just coming out the other end. You want it to get into your body and do its job. So you want to dial in the dose that doesn't give you loose stool. So adults need at least 320 milligrams a day, up to just over 400 milligrams. And if you can't get there with diet, then you take a supplement. And I start low. I tend to start low in terms of supplementation. I don't start at that 400 milligram dose. If somebody comes in and they're taking that much and they're not having any digestive upset with it, I tell them to stay on it. So it can be really helpful for you. So that's the magnesium story. Okay. So now let's go on to osteoarthritis and specific treatments for osteoarthritis. So here's some home remedies for osteoarthritis. Here's things that may work. And so normal versus arthritic joints. Let's see. So home remedies that can be helpful if you have osteoarthritis. They don't necessarily replace medical treatments, but they can make you feel better. So one of the things you can do are hot and cold compresses. So my chiropractor is a big fan of cold. He thinks hot brings too much circulation to the area. When I was in naturopathic college, we talked about alternating hot and cold, where you do 3 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold, and you alternate at least three times. If I'm acutely inflamed, I will do cold, and I'll do cold for 20 minutes because that's what my chiropractor said to do, and I do find it helpful. But then there are those who think that doing cold is not a good idea because it makes everything gel and you don't get as much flow and circulation in the area. The thing is that some people use heat and it feels very soothing. When you get into an Epsom salt bath, you don't get into a cold bath. You get into a warm bath and you feel better. Yeah. And then also if you go and take a shower, if you're feeling achy and sore and you go take a shower, a warm shower, you feel better, right?
Right. Yeah. I'll tell you something else. When you're feeling cold, you just get into heat.
Heat makes you feel better. I know. And yeah. when our backs are sore and achy, we go downstairs and stand in front of the wood stove and we feel better. So I'm not so sure about always cold. I believe in that hydrotherapy. One of the cardinal rules of hydrotherapy is always end with cold. Now, when you're ending with cold doesn't mean stand outside and freeze. It means 30 seconds of cold or as much cold as you can tolerate. And if you can only tolerate 10 seconds, that's all you do. Because when you put a hot compress on, so there's short heat versus long heat, and then there's short cold versus long cold. So long cold is going to draw circulation to the area that you're treating. Long cold is going to drive it away. So that's why you're going to sit with if you have acute inflammation, you're going to sit with a compress on your knee for 20 minutes. That's going to drive all that excess circulation out of the area. But if you've done heat, you're doing heat, initially heat is going to draw circulation to the area, but after a while your body's going to push the circulation away because the area could be overheating. So if you put a short cold on, like 30 seconds, it's going to draw that circulation back to the area. That's why we like to do alternating hot and cold, because it creates a flushing situation. Flushing, like where I lived for 4 years of my life.
Yeah,
Flushing, New York. Well, it's called Flushing is an anglicization of Vlissingen, which is the Dutch name for the area.
Flushing, like
because New York was settled by the Dutch.
Oh.
That's why New York City used to be called New Amsterdam. So anyway, so other things you can do at home. We already talked about the Epsom salt bath, which can provide all over relief, especially for joint pain. The magnesium can help with inflammation and pain. And there was a study that showed that soaking in an Epsom salt bath for a long time can increase your magnesium levels. So, okay. So there is some evidence that if you sit in the Epsom salts, you're going to absorb some of the magnesium. I don't think it should be relied upon. Like I said, I think the reason you feel better when you get an Epsom salt bath is because the magnesium is touching the nerve endings and it's causing your nerves to calm down, which causes you to calm down. But if you want to increase your magnesium levels, you need to take magnesium orally. But you can get Epsom salts pretty much anywhere. They're you can get them from a drugstore or the drug section of your supermarket, online, of course. You can get them scented. Like Epsom salts will often come scented either with lavender or they'll come with eucalyptus and peppermint in it. If you get it plain and there are essential oils you enjoy in your bath, you can mix and match whatever you like. I had a little kit of oils I was meant for bath, and I used them up through taking a series of Epsom salt baths. One had sage in it, one had lemon, one had mint, one had lavender. And when I do take Epsom salt baths, either I use lavender scented Epsom salts or I put lavender into the bath. And I am a lover of the lavender. I really like the way it smells and I think it calms me down. It has a nice, fresh, calming scent. And it's both energizing and calming at the same time. My mother and my sister are not into lavender. They don't like the smell of lavender, which is really? So weird. Yeah, because Nancy is Miss Purple. She has purple hair. She loves everything purple. She does not like the smell of lavender. If I send her soap or essential oils that have lavender in it, she doesn't care for it. My mother's the same way. It's genetic. It's genetic, and it's everybody has a preference. I enjoy it. Do you like the smell of lavender?
It's okay. Yeah.
It's okay.
Like lilacs.
It's sort of like lilacs. Not exactly. It's not the same. Lilacs are a bit sweeter because lavender is a mint. It's in the Lamiaceae family. It's a mint. Looks like rosemary. It's similar. Like if you see it growing, rosemary and lavender look similar to each other. And rosemary also happens to be rosemary oil is something you can put in your bathtub. Rosmarinic acid is a wonderful anti-inflammatory, and you can get supplements with that in it. You can eat rose. Oh, we had those nice potatoes last night.
We didn't put rosemary.
I know, and we could have.
We could have. We could do it another time.
All right, let's do it another time. So that's your workout.
That was what I did.
That's lovely. Yeah. Here, hand that to me.
Sure.
This is Ron's workout. Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah,
so there were eight.
If you're on Facebook Live or Instagram Live, you can see Ron's workout on iCardio. So that's very good. You got into an anaerobic zone.
Right.
But what's interesting is your zone 4 is like high 130s. High 130s is my, that's probably zone 3 for me.
Everyone's different.
Yeah, well, it's because you're a guy. And you're older, and
I'm older than dirt.
I don't know what my exact heart rate zones are, but I lowered mine in my iCardio, and I'll have to try it when I get to when I go to your class next. I'll try it. My intention is to come next Sunday. So anyway, then aside from Epsom salts, there's also topical ointments and creams. You can get topical versions because your topical versions of NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, that you can apply to sore joints and they can be helpful. And they might have aspirin in them. They can have other pain relievers. They can have, there's a lot of gels that are popular now that have the active ingredient Voltaren, which is diclofenac. Yes, there it is, diclofenac. It says it right there. And so that's very popular. You can get that easily over the counter at your favorite drugstore. Also topically, you can get capsaicin. And you can get capsaicin at the drugstore. It's often in compounds, stuff you can get from natural medicine suppliers. Capsaicin is extract of, guess what? Cayenne pepper. And Capsaicin is a counter irritant. So yes, capsaicin is made from hot chili peppers. Capsaicin is the active ingredient in all your favorite hot peppers, your habanero and your ghost pepper, and your, they just have different amounts of the capsaicin in it. So when you apply topically, it's a counter irritant. Capsaicin's job is to deplete substance P. Substance P is in the nerve endings all over your body. And when you deplete substance P, it interrupts the pain pathway. So when you put capsaicin on, it feels warming and sort of irritating, but because it depletes substance P, it can help to reduce pain. You can get, then there's like Tiger Balm. So Tiger Balm is a, has things like menthol and camphor in it. And my, I don't know if it has methyl salicylate, but it does have salicylates in it. And I like to use Tiger Balms directly on joints that are inflamed. I also, so this is interesting. This is the source I'm reading doesn't have a lot of stuff in it about topicals. So I'll talk about a few more. So you can get topicals that contain arnica. Think about so arnica you can use either homeopathically or as the actual arnica oil. Arnica oil that is not homeopathic, you should stay away from broken skin because arnica has an element of toxicity. It's not supposed to go inside your body. It can go inside your body if it's homeopathic. If it's in homeopathic doses, then it's fine. But if it is arnica oil, real arnica or an arnica salve, it doesn't, it's keep it away from broken skin. It arnica is indicated if you have actual bruising or if the part feels as though it's bruised. Another keynote of arnica is the person feels like, no, I'm fine. You try to help them and they push you away. They say that they're fine. Or, you know, so for a person who wants to keep pushing through and keep doing their exercise, even though they're in pain, arnica is helpful for that. So again, you can get arnica in ointments or salves. If it's an ointment, it's often homeopathic. And if you get it in a salve, it will often be mixed with other things. We have an arnica salve at our office. It has, I like to have arnica and St. John's wort together because St. John's wort is a great topical for nerve pain. And St. John's wort, it's fine if the skin is irritated or, you know, if it's open, that's all right. But if there's arnica in it, if you have real arnica in a salve or an oil, you do not put it on broken skin. You don't put it on a rash. So if the skin is abraded, or like if you have a scrape, you do not put arnica on the scrape. You can put it outside the scrape if there's bruising in the area, but do not put it right on the scrape. Right on the scrape, then you put calendula, aloe, St. John's wort is fine, berberine, olive oil, beeswax. All of those things are fine to put directly on. Comfrey is fine to put directly on something. So arnica, all of those things can be helpful for topicals. I have a lovely topical that I got that's nothing but coconut oil, frankincense, and coconut oil, frankincense, and turmeric. That's what's in it. And turmeric you can use topically as an anti-inflammatory. The coconut oil helped it to get in a bit. And frankincense, the Latin name is Boswellia, is also great as an anti-inflammatory, and you can put it on topically. And so this nice salve, it smells really nice because it, you know, it's the frankincense is fragrant, so it mostly smells like the frankincense. Turmeric doesn't have as much of an interesting odor, so I'll put that on sometimes. I forget about it because it's on my nightstand, but I should use it more because it's really nice. It's in pure coconut oil, so the thing is, coconut oil, regular pure coconut oil is a wonderful amorphous solid. What is an amorphous solid? Do you know, Ron?
I have no idea.
An amorphous solid is something that has a range of melting points. It's not, doesn't have a, whereas a compound, a molecule or an atom will have a specific melting point that's a specific temperature. An amorphous solid has a range of melting points. And so your coconut oil, depending on the temperature of your house, is going to either be hard as a rock, moderately soft, or oil. So if the coconut oil, so I don't carry coconut oil based things to my mother's house when it's going to be warm out, because she keeps her house really warm and everything tends to melt. And if it melts while it's in my luggage, that's not good either. So I think I So I can't bring that nice, that frankincense salve to my mother's house because it tends to melt. So it's okay here because we tend to keep it, it tends to be cool in our house most of the year. Because when it gets to be spring, we open the windows, and when it gets to be super hot, we turn on the AC because some of us need that. Others of us don't, but some of us do. Mm-hmm. So those are great topicals as well. So for arthritis, I like that. I got an Ayurvedic salve that featured neem and a bunch of other Ayurvedic Indian herbs in it, probably turmeric as well, and frankincense. So you can get those too. I'm just thinking, topically, other things you can use topically for arthritis. Comfrey is a really good one. Comfrey is good for sore joints. We already talked about capsaicin, having cayenne pepper in. And another thing is ginger. Ginger is great. It's a great thing to eat if you have sore joints because it's a great anti-inflammatory. It's anti-inflammatory everywhere. It's anti-inflammatory in your digestive system, so you're going to tend to absorb more stuff if you consume ginger regularly. And ginger often is in topicals. So for arthritis, because it's nice and warming and it's anti-inflammatory. So it's a great ingredient to have in a topical salve. So those are good topicals. Then there's support devices. There's all kinds of support devices. My current favorite support device that I'm enjoying is one that's washable and it contains bamboo. It has just the right amount of stretchiness in it. It's not too much and not too little. And I've been wearing it when I exercise. I wear it when I'm on the bicycle. I am sweating on it, so now I have to wash it. And it's a good idea. I think I'm going to have to get a new one eventually because I think their stretch wears out after a while. But I am really liking this supportive one. You can get support sleeves for whatever arthritic part you have. So this company that makes the bamboo one, they have gloves for your arthritic. Would you be interested in bamboo-based brace for your hand? Because for your joint, for your wrists?
Maybe.
If you wanted it, would you want one or two? Because we can get you that. There's lovely hand braces with for arthritic hands.
For my hands.
Yeah, but these are really nice because it's got just the right amount of support and stretch in it. I know you have a brace, but braces tend to be stiff. This is one of those situations that you can move in it. You could also be taping your hands.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay, but if you do, but this is it's like a fingerless glove that has all the support in it from the bamboo. So you can get gloves for your arthritic wrists and hands, and you can get braces that will work on your arms, and you have braces that can work on your knees. And I don't know if you can get, you can certainly get things that wrap around your back if you need support for your back. But I like these bamboo ones. You can also get braces that have some stretch in them, probably from Lycra, and also they can be imbued with oxygenating compounds, and they can also be imbued with copper, copper can be helpful for joint pain. So I think those are useful too. People, of course, use canes, and there are different kinds of canes that people use. There's ones that just have a straight spot right on the ground, and then there's some that have 3 or 4 feet going out from the stick. So that's something you can use as well. Those can be helpful. You can get grabbing and gripping tools. So if you have, if you have pain in your hands, you can get grabbing and gripping tools. And then there's tape. And again, tape comes in all kinds of strengths and it comes in different levels of stickiness. You can get tape, again, that's imbued with copper, and tape that's imbued with oxygenating fabric. So I will tape sometimes. I'm not taping lately because I don't seem to need it. And I'm trying to find days where I can get away with not taping because of what Dr. Scott said, that you want to make sure your muscles get strong on their own. And then, of course, you can get shoe inserts. And it's good to get, you could seek the services of a podorthist. A podorthist is somebody who makes therapeutic shoes and therapeutic inserts. They're like the person that makes your glasses, but it's for feet. Okay. So then there's lots of herbal remedies that you can get for arthritis. There are so many things, and I may run out of time and want to pick up on this next week. But herbal remedies are things that you can take orally. Green tea is something that can be helpful. The EGCG in green tea is anti-inflammatory. And I'm wondering, see, I'm taking a lot of things that are probably helping my arthritic health. But I really think that taking the green lip mussel took me a step up because it has omega-3 fatty acids in it. I already take fish oil, but I'm taking it has omega-3 fatty acids in it, and it has absorbable glycosaminoglycans. I think that's helping. So I'm very impressed with the green-lipped mussel. And you can get green-lipped mussel from your friendly local naturopath. You can get it online. You can get various brands of it. Make sure it's a good quality, whatever you do get. But green tea has anti-inflammatory polyphenols. Mostly, it has EGCG in it. So I'm taking it in a supplement. I have to be careful how much caffeine I take. So drinking multiple cups of green tea in a day is not going to work for me. So, but taking a supplement that has the caffeine taken out, that is helpful for me. So I take that every day. I'm going to be taking it after I get off the air here. Concentrated, there's a suggestion that if you take too much green tea, it can hurt your liver. I don't know if that's true because I think of green tea as something that helps your liver. It definitely can help to regenerate your liver. It's good for liver health, but I suppose there's such a thing as too much of it. So watch out for it. Then we already talked about ginger. Getting ginger in your life is wonderful. So oral ginger is known for reducing pain from arthritis. There's a study showing that taking ginger long-term can decrease the risk of osteoarthritis-related disability. I was taking ginger caps for a while, but then I said, why should I take the caps? I'll just eat it. And we don't always eat it, so I probably should get more ginger in my life somehow. Ginger is so pleasant to eat. I do have ginger candy. I usually have at least a piece or two of that a day. And then sometimes we have ginger in our food. Let's have something with ginger tonight. Okay. Do you know what we're having for supper tonight?
I haven't quite decided yet.
Something with ginger in it. Okay.
Yeah,
so
we do that a lot. Yeah.
All right. So ginger, you can use it as a spice. You can drink ginger tea. We like to make, Ron will boil down ginger tea. You let it simmer for at least an hour with a whole, like a big handful of organic ginger, and simmer it down and make a ginger concentrated tea, which is great. If you overdose on ginger, you can get withdrawal symptoms, and too much ginger can upset your stomach, give you diarrhea and heartburn, but enough ginger will take care of all of those things. It can interact with some prescription medications. It is a blood thinner, so if you're on a blood thinner, you have to be careful not to consume too much, and you should talk to your doctor before increasing it. So I have to go because it's time. So I will talk more next week about natural remedies for osteoarthritis, and we will continue on this path because I have a lot of stuff that... I have so many things that I would love to talk to you about. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.